am. I said Donald Trump is a wannabe dictator. And when you're a dictator, you surround yourself with the people you trust, and the people you trust most are family. So he has now installed his daughter-in-law at the Republican National Committee, which is close to broke in terms of how much money parties should have, and has no money for down-ballot candidates, which is bad for the party.
David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist. That does it for our show. Happy birthday, Nermeen Sheikh.
Rectangular, rapid-flashing beacons are warning devices at pedestrian crossings. Maintaining safety at these crossings is the responsibility of both pedestrians and drivers. Be watchful when you see a pedestrian beacon, and look for approaching pedestrians, even when the lights are dark. A pedestrian should push the button to activate the signal. When the lights begin flashing, indicate you intend to cross by carefully stepping into the crosswalk. The flashing lights are meant to catch a motorist's attention. When you see them, it means a pedestrian is trying to cross. Be prepared to yield to pedestrians in the crosswalk. Allow pedestrians to completely cross the road, whether or not the lights are still flashing. When pedestrians and motorists follow the rules of the road, everyone can stay safe.
That's right. And you are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. Time once again for Off the Wall. a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this, Tuesday night, Tuesday evening. I'm joined tonight by Kyle.
Oh, of course.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Not bad, I guess. You know, it's spring is pretty much sprung, and it's light. Daylight savings time, full effect.
The moon is out.
The moon, you know, interesting. The moon was just full, and now the moon is, what is it, waning or waxing? I always get it mixed up when it gets smaller.
It is waning.
It's waning. Yes, it's waning. So it's getting smaller and smaller, rising later every day. Actually, it rises later every day all the time. And actually, it's not rising at all. It's the rotation of the Earth. But you know what? I'm not getting into that. But it's getting smaller and smaller. And when it gets to nothing, when it becomes what's known as the new moon, when you can't see it, oh, you will see it, because it's going to go right in front of the sun on April 8th. Total solar eclipse. A TSE. Yeah. They don't happen often. And if you're one of the stubborn people that doesn't want to travel to see it in totality, because it's only going to be partial here on Long Island, don't fret, because there will be a total solar eclipse that will be visible on Long Island in 2079. So, just around the corner. That's the star news for right now. Wow. Interesting events happening. I'm just still, I think we've all seen the video of the bridge collapse in Baltimore. That is just unbelievable. I saw it this morning, and you know, I've been on a cargo ship across the Pacific Ocean. I've been on bridges. I didn't know what could happen when the two of them met. That thing just folded like it was a toy. And yeah, the ship, of course, is huge, really, really big. It dwarfs the one that I was on. But didn't that bridge seem to come down awfully easy?
Well, I think it's the look. I'm not a.
Whatever.
Why do you throw me a question on seismic?
I'm making a fool of myself talking about bridges.
Yeah,
it's time I share that.
Let me just pick that right up and run with it. Of course, because bridge design. Let's see. I made one out of toothpicks in elementary school.
Kyle, people are talking about bridges. Today is a day people are talking about bridges. All right. I just want to fit in.
Golly. Okay. Well, can we please fit in? That's all I wish in this world. Yeah, it's where it hit it. It was on one of the very large support on one side. I'm guessing, but the other side, the opposite one, maintained the entire load of that half as it was falling into the water, and even teetered a little bit before collapsing onto it, and it still didn't, support on the opposite side still didn't collapse under the weight of like half of a section kind of teeter-tottering on the pin. There's usually like some kind of axis it rests on. So watching that, you realize how unbelievably strong those things are. But in the water, if a giant cargo vessel rams it, its job of supporting that section is going to fail, and the rest of it is dependent on that. Just all of the load-bearing points start failing. So it was amazing once I saw some of the video. I just heard it had collapsed. I figured, oh, there's like, you know, a piece, you know, of one roadway was just like falling over. No, the entire stretch of
the whole damn thing.
Raised section just went right in. And so they're going to need like a hell of a lot of cranes, a hell of a lot of barges, divers. It's going to take them like months, I think. I mean, they're as fast as they can, but like,
well, they're still searching for bodies.
They're trying to figure out, if they need to rescue or if it's just recover. It's like, it's all messed up. Road traffic, shipping traffic. I mean, just to assess the situation, it's going to take weeks. I know the Army Corps of Engineers is already there, but it's going to take a while to figure out. When I heard that the crew said they lost control, that's either a really big stretch or they did. And maybe because it was on one side, maybe the very heavy vessel riding low, maybe it ran aground and they couldn't steer, and then it drifted into this. it's really tough to say, but the NTSB and everybody who is concerned will investigate, I'm sure, because there are a lot of hands on deck right now, pun intended.
Yeah. Who says you don't know about bridges? Load bearing and supporting beams and things like that? Well, these are words I don't know.
I have the gift.
I guess you do.
I can talk about it all.
Well,
it's just my theories, though.
You know, I don't know. I've only known one a cargo ship captain in my life, and that's the cargo ship I was on. Nice guy. But if he were a nasty guy, then pretty much he has his choice as to what bridges to take out. You know, if he just rams into the supporting beam, you know, it makes me a little worried. You just kind of think that it would take more, but I guess not.
To be a pilot, I don't know if this was actually underway or if they have other vessels like tugs. I mean, we've talked about this on the Mississippi a lot, and how barges and merchandise commodities are moved around in rivers. But the same idea for a narrow passageway like this, where you're heading out to the sea and stuff. Those tugs have reputations and a lot of years of experience, presumably, as well as being a captain of a vessel, a cargo vessel like that. I mean, yeah, if they were nasty, but they wouldn't last very long. They'd be definitely looking for like perhaps a new career change.
Well, you know,
it's not something you're going to get like rehired quickly.
No, I don't think this captain has much of a future in boating. But
it's not like being the CEO of an airline company or something.
Well, this has been a good week for transportation in general. But even, you know, a massive cruise ship, you know, hitting a bridge like that, could that also have caused the same type of damage?
Yeah, and instead of commodities on board, you might have people sleeping, you know, passengers. So
I don't care about them. It's a bridge. It's a structure that I'm worried about. You know, that's just going to come down like a house of cards. All right. I care about the people a little bit, but not, you know, we're talking cargo on this thing. I mean,
I don't know what we're trying to figure out. It's a heavy vessel, people, no people, maybe cargo's heavier or it rides lower.
That could be.
Although, don't know any of this.
Go on some of these cruise ships, the cargo there is pretty damn heavy. Ooh, but you know
zing.
What? I got to stop attacking cruise ship passengers. Here's the thing. Maybe boats shouldn't be that big. How about that for an idea? Because they just keep getting bigger and bigger. Like I said, when I rode a cargo ship, it was maybe a tenth the size of the one that I saw today, maybe even less. And we rode the QM2 at one point. That was the biggest ship in the world, biggest passenger ship in the world. And it's nothing compared to some of those Princess Cruise lines. So maybe, you know, instead of making things bigger and bigger, that can cause more damage, kind of like, you know, SUVs on the road, because I've almost been in two head-on collisions this week alone from idiots driving oversized vehicles that figure the WL line doesn't pertain to them. I think, you know, maybe there's something similar going on in the world of boats and planes as well. Are these massive airplanes, you know, produced en masse? Maybe we've lost control there too.
Certainly. You've raised fantastic points, specifically with shipping. I know when it got, when we had a very large one get stuck, was it the Suez near Egypt?
Yeah, I think it was the Suez.
On the way. Yeah. And it really disrupted a lot of shipping. And of course the Black Sea, and there's plenty of reasons to be concerned when shipping traffic is not functional.
Mm-hmm.
So the increase size demanded by scaling up economies endlessly,
right.
You're going to start to run into to natural constraints, e.g. the very size of waterways. And mm-hmm. It has to be that, in my opinion, that we bridle some of our ceaseless profit seeking, especially when it comes to matters of scaling beyond the ability for our natural systems to sustain that very activity. So it's a big, big issue. And I think it boils down to like really basic philosophical questions. Like, what are we doing? Like, what is the point of all of this?
Uh-huh.
So we're advanced economies. So we're like fully developed, you know, what then? I mean, billionaires are talking about being spacefaring and that, and there's plenty of support for that from industry and government, but collectively, like, what are we sort of doing with all of this advancement? And if it's just to have more cheaper quantities of cheaper goods, mm-hmm. That put smaller ventures, smaller businesses out of business and off the market, off the playing field, then we really run into these things where big players, when they topple entire segments of society with them. They bring them down with them. So I don't know. I think there's huge issues here. People should be more thoughtful about it, but unfortunately, the investment class and the people that are making some of these decisions for us as a society, they don't really care. Like, their mm-hmm. lawns are manicured.
Well said. And, you know, it brings to mind, you know, we see this huge expansion, things getting bigger and cheaper, you know, to ship. And you don't need as many workers and artificial intelligence. You can lay off, you know, your staff and replace them with computer routines.
It's class stratification. It's straight up.
Like, you know, you do the same thing on a number of levels. And the people who benefit are the people who run the organizations, not the people who work for the organizations. And the question being brought up repeatedly now, and I think it's a very fair question, is, well, if you're going to do something that makes a company run for less, why can't the people who have sweated and bled for this company also benefit from that advantage instead of just the people who do the laying off? Well, how about the people who are losing their jobs? Maybe they can get something out of this as well. It's very lopsided. It's very unfair. And I think, you know, we're seeing the results of it.
Well, the attitude is those people are infinitely replaceable, but the profits for the shareholders are not. So you cut into that, you can't replace it.
Uh-huh.
Workers, you just get cheaper and, you know, you just keep the turnover, whatever you need to keep the profits pumping.
Yeah, I think people are starting to really get angry at this.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not Joe Biden's fault. So, yeah, he'd be the first to stand on a picket line with everybody. But, you know, there was this great show, actually. I think it was back in the 70s with Michael Palin from Monty Python. It's called GBH. It's got nothing to do with WGBH, the PBS station in Boston. It's something British, GBH. I don't know what it stands for. He plays a character who is afraid, deathly afraid of driving over bridges. You know, he can't do it. He can't go from one place to another because he is afraid of bridges. And I might be turning into somebody like that pretty soon. It's, you know, if you can find that series, it is really well done. It's got to do with politics and all kinds of societal conflict and things like that. But, you know, this is not something we can just dismiss. This is not something that we can say, well, unfortunately, you know, for them, it could be a threat anywhere. They say they're trying to blame the bridge now. They're saying the bridge was old. The bridge was built in the 1970s. All right. An old bridge is one that was built maybe in the 1800s. Bridges last.
What new bridge could sustain that kind of impact and stand?
I don't know.
I'd love to know. I mean, I'm sure maybe there is one, but how do you even test and certify that is the fact?
You get one of those evil cargo captains to ram into it and see. But yeah, I maintain it's too big. The boats are too big, and certain things. I think we've seen what the limit is. All right. The last thing I was expecting to see today is something like this, but boy, it shows you how fragile things are. Okay. We have some interesting developments with the Middle East. We've been following this as well. UN Security Council yesterday, amazing. Imagine this. They adopted a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Palestinian militant group Hamas. And the United States made it possible. How did the United States make it possible? By voting for it? No. By abstaining. By just saying, you know what, we're not going to say a word about this. And that allowed it to pass. And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is furious. Oh, my God. Big temper tantrum. He had warned before the vote that the delegation's visit would be pulled. The delegation to Washington, if the United States did not veto the motion.
Boo-hoo.
Yeah, the U.S. abstention signals a widening divide between the White House and Israel's current government, the most right-wing in history. Nearly 6 months into its war against Hamas in the Gaza Strip, Israel's offensive into the Gaza enclave which came in response to the October 7th Hamas terror attacks, has killed tens of thousands of people. And, you know, it really sickens me to see how the apologists out there justify this. You know, when confronted on talk shows or in the media about tens of thousands of innocent civilians and, you know, children, mothers, how do you get more innocent than that? It's justified. They go back to the mantra, Israel has the right to defend itself. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, everyone has the right to defend themselves, including the people that you're bombing. You know, let me ask you a question. If you know, the person saying this are confronted by somebody who kicks in your door and starts destroying the place you live, kills your dog, is threatening you, puts a blindfold over your eyes, you have the opportunity to strike back at that person and stop them from doing that. Do you? Or do you just say, oh, Israel has the right to defend itself, and, you know, these people that supposedly represent me are wrong, so I guess I just have to pay the price for them. That is basically what is being said every day in the mass media, that Palestinians have no rights, that they just have to lie back and accept it. Kind of the same thing that happened in World War II. You know, where the Jews were almost wiped out by this kind of thinking, where you just got to sit back and take it. Don't fight back. It's only going to get worse, and it's kind of your fault. It's sickening. It really is sickening. You know, October, we were fiercely condemning what happened on October 7th, as most civilized people would have done when something like that happened. But this, it's just, you couldn't do a worse job fighting back, I don't think, because it just makes the rest of the world look on you in horror when you simply don't care about the people that you're hurting. Look, here's an exercise. All right, let's say that Hamas has managed to hide themselves in a middle-class neighborhood in Tel Aviv, you know? They just, I don't know how they did it, but, you know, they can do things like this. And there they are, they're somewhere in there. Well, the right thing to do is to destroy that middle-class neighborhood in Tel Aviv. The people are innocent, we know that. And they're also Israeli citizens, you know. But we have to wipe out Hamas at any cost. I don't think that would happen. I don't think that would happen because, you know, maniacs like Netanyahu see Palestinians as subhuman. They'll say they don't, but look at the actions. Judge people by their actions, by what they do, what they back up, what they excuse. And the truth will just come right out. Netanyahu, you know, we've been saying this for ages. He has got to go. He is the worst thing to happen to that country. You know, the terrorist attack happened under his watch. They should have caught it. It makes you wonder, why didn't they catch it? You know, in the same way that American politicians were so quick to sign the Patriot Act into law after 9/11, it's like Netanyahu got a wish list fulfilled and was able to finally wipe the Palestinians off the face of the earth, bury the two-state solution. This was his dream. This was Trump's dream as well. And it's not said enough that, you know, Trump and Netanyahu together laid the groundwork for all of this. You know, it's just amazing to see on television Trump blaming Biden for everything that happens, but for this in particular, something that, you know, he engineered in the first place. He made the mess. So, of course, something like this is bound to happen. You know, just like he signed the agreement to pull out of Afghanistan. And so when we pulled out of Afghanistan, it was a disaster. There was no way it couldn't be a disaster. But Biden gets blamed because it happened under his watch, the pullout. But it was agreed to. It was signed by Donald Trump. So it's really the amount of manipulation and bending of the truth is simply incredible, unbelievable.
Unforgivable.
Definitely unforgivable. Definitely unforgivable. And I hope the people in Israel give Netanyahu what is coming to him, because the damage he has caused is probably worse than any enemy of the country. And there are so many formidable enemies of that country. But an enemy from within, that you don't recognize immediately as an enemy, that can cause so much damage, irreparable damage.
And people are protesting. Some of that was occurring before October 7th already, but it did not exactly make sense to continue in the same way after that event. And we were, of course, you know, noting that and expressing caution about reacting, kind of drawing parallels to 9/11. And now here we are sitting with the reaction. And it's it. What do I want to say? the people I think that have been enduring the last 3 or 4 months, you know, they've probably lost sons and daughters now. There's definitely a cost that is coming back home. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that protest is actually, it's emerging, or it hasn't, maybe it hasn't ever stopped, but it's definitely become louder in the last, I mean, in the calls for ceasefires, and just in how glaringly hasty this whole thing has been to seek retribution and annihilation in accordance with this sort of far right global initiative. Mm-hmm. Embracing unrest and blaming everything on others.
Yeah, it's just incredible how they somehow expect innocent Palestinians to change the regime. Look, it's a dictatorial regime. It's a horrible regime. What happens when people try to justify this massacre is people say, you know, the Palestinians shouldn't have elected Hamas. Well, you know, that happened so long ago that a lot of the people you're killing weren't even alive when they got quote unquote elected. And no election has been permitted since then. And, you know, I dare say Hamas and the Israeli government help each other in keeping people there miserable and justifying each other's existences. You know, there's a lot of advantage to warlike settings for corrupt people in power. And I think we see a bit of that on both sides, quite a bit of that on both sides. There is no way that anybody that is currently being victimized can do anything about that regime at all. And what you're doing by wiping out families and basically burying people under rubble, well, put yourself in their shoes. If somebody did that to you, all right, if a particular nation or a particular group of people did that to your family, wiped out your entire family before your eyes, and you're, say, what, 6, 7 years old, maybe, you know, 20 years from now, when you're grown up, you might have an opportunity to get revenge. Would you take it? Or should you be the bigger person and say, well, you know, Palestinians did something bad at one point, or the government did something bad, so I guess I'll let this slide. No, you would wait. You would bide your time and you would strike. That is a human reaction. Let's not be surprised when it happens. We shouldn't have been surprised when this happened. And that's not an excuse for what happened. What happened was horrible. But, you know, if you mix certain chemicals together, you're going to get an explosion. And, you know, you can't just treat the explosion as if it came out of nothing. No, it came out of a combination of things that could have been prevented. Let's look at the people who missed that opportunity to prevent it. That's, you know, where you start to actually make things better. But it's in such sorry shape now. I don't see that happening in a long time. But stopping the massacre, yeah, that's something we can get behind. And finally, the United States did the right thing. Well, the right thing would have been voting, you know, for a ceasefire. And I don't understand the logic behind it. Voting for a ceasefire, they didn't condemn Hamas enough. Look, let's start with a ceasefire. Let's stop the killing. That's always a good way to start something, all right? And then we can work on language tweaks afterwards, you know, and say, okay, let's condemn them a little harsher. Let's get the hostages back, you know? Isn't that the priority? We do that, and then we figure the rest out. And, you know, you very well may get to blow more people up. So, you know, don't lose hope. But for God's sake, this is lunacy. And, you know, I'm happy. I'm not proud of Biden's stance at the beginning of this, but I'm happy to see him evolve. He's listening. It might not be what we wanted when we wanted it, but it's a change. And it's not the kind of change you would see with other people, other more dictatorial people. Let's look at somebody like Putin, all right? We almost forgot to mention the terrorist attack that took place in Russia in the past week. Horrors, absolute horrors in a concert hall. And ISIS is still around. They're back. Apparently, Trump didn't defeat them after all. And they took responsibility for this. But Putin doesn't want them to take responsibility. He wants to blame this on Ukraine. It's so shameless. He's at war with Ukraine. He wants Ukraine to take the fall here, even though they had absolutely nothing to do with it. And all the facts point to that. It's ISIS. ISIS themselves took credit for... Are you calling ISIS liars? I mean, they may be terrorists, but no, seriously. They have video from their people of them committing these atrocities. It was ISIS. And I don't think ISIS is working with Ukraine. That would be a weird combination. And then, you know, Putin is saying things like, well, they tried to escape to Ukraine. Really? That's how you escape into a war zone? You run into the battlefield? That's not how you escape. It's all made up. And it's shameless what he's doing, trying to make this into something that will get more support for his war. So, you know, I hope the Russian people wake up and see him for what he is. Boy, so many bad leaders.
Yeah, and I think that I want to just put this caveat out here. I don't want to say any of this is funny, but I do think that, I want to be clear that we have an extreme sense of humor about these very bad jokes and lies that are being told. It is funny to me that they expect us to care enough to even counter it, or not, or flounder, or be mad, or anything. We're way past that. I have nothing but laughter for all of these creatures. Seriously. I think they are hilarious. Anymore. There's nothing but jokes left of them, in my view.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we have a kind of fatalistic sense of humor. I think most of the world shares that. But yeah, that's what's going on. That's part of the world. This whole controversy over at NBC with Trump's former spokesperson or GOP national chairwoman, Ronna McDaniel. You heard about this, Kyle?
I know who she is, and I have heard about this.
Now, on NBC, I think even on Meet the Press, people were speaking out against NBC's decision to hire her as an expert commentator or whatever the role is. Is that true?
I've been watching some NBC programs, so I know a lot of the correspondents and other departments have pointed out that this wasn't an MSNBC hiring decision. This was an NBC,
yeah.
So NBC News. Main parent organization. And I mean, it's not unusual for there to be commentators from across political and other kinds of ideological spectrum. But what has been pointed out is just how much water she has been carrying for Trump, and specifically his crimes.
Right.
Like, that is not journalistically, that does not comport with being involved in an actual real deal news organization. Mm-hmm. You can go be on, you know, Newsmax with your, Hitler documentaries and stuff at 3 a.m., but that's not what NBC's for.
Is that what they, I don't tune to that channel.
Yeah, early in the morning, that's what they play.
Wow. I don't dare to. For some reason, Optimum carries the Newsmax channel, and it's right next to Euronews too, which is terrible. I mean, Euronews is great, but putting Newsmax next to them, ugh. But anyway, the reason I brought this up was this just happened right now. NBC News has cut ties with Ronna McDaniel, so victory for the people that were objecting to her being brought on board. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I'm all for freedom of speech and all that. But like you said, Kyle, I mean, this is somebody who carried water for Trump. I would not consider her an expert in anything other than lying and being deceitful and being an enemy to democracy.
Someone found the easy button.
Yeah, yeah. So, kudos for those people basically risking their jobs by speaking out and saying what was on their minds.
That's not parity. Right? That's not equal. When you bring in someone who does not care about ethics or standards or being truthful, being honest, being accurate and correct in your reporting, or being unbiased. Like, if you're doing that, and all of a sudden your alleged peer is doing quite the opposite, or has a reputation for quite the opposite, and you're to be compared or thought to be an equal or a colleague of this person, like, that's the recipe for getting an entire newsroom to quit.
Yes, definitely. Almost happened. Could have happened. And voices matter.
Yeah, and there is inequality. Like, there are people that are given airtime and credibility that absolutely do not deserve it, and they are not equal. They're not. They're treated that way. They're sort of propped up to appear that they are equal, but they're not. Absolutely not. And I'm, again, I have nothing but laughter for what is trotted out as something that I ought to give any kind of credence or attention, any kind of like credit. You know, I don't really want to try to vet things that are so clearly wrong, and it just it has been the norm that we just continue to accept the erosion of outlets of information, and it just will not stand. Like, I have, as I said, nothing but hilarity.
Oh, you have more than that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm being as uplifting as I can be on the radio, but,
no, but anger is a good thing to express, and, you know, condemnation and all that. Yeah. There's humor in this. We can laugh at these people, but they're a serious threat. And they need to be treated that way.
It's not even them. It's just that the thought that then I'm supposed to take their actions and them as people to be equals or credible. Like, that to me is hilarious. They're not that funny. They're like acid reflux.
This is like Sean Spicer being on Dancing with the Stars. You know, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? This is not right. No. All right. Since we brought up Trump, I guess we got to continue here. So Trump has said that Jewish Democrats are being disloyal to their faith and to Israel. And that didn't sit well with many American Jews taking up positions behind now familiar political lines. Trump opponents accused him of promoting anti-Semitic tropes. Of course, his defender suggested he was making a fair political point in his own way. What do you think? To many Jewish leaders in a demographic that is overwhelmingly identified as Democratic and supported Biden in 2020, Trump's latest comments promoted harmful anti-Semitic stereotypes, painting Jews as having divided loyalties and that there's only one right way to be Jewish religiously.
I'm so tired of people jerking people around, telling them how to be, or you're not this, or you're more this, and get over yourselves.
Now, Trump's comments were in response to a speech by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, happens to be Jewish. He's the country's highest ranking Jewish official, in fact. Schumer last week sharply criticized Benjamin Netanyahu's handling of the war in Gaza. Schumer called for new elections in Israel and warned the civilian toll was damaging Israel's global standing. Kind of what we've been saying here since October, whenever they started.
4 months?
Any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion, Trump said on a talk show. They hate everything about Israel. A cascade of Jewish voices from Schumer to the Anti-Defamation League to religious leaders denounced Trump's statement. In a statement to the Associated Press last Wednesday, the Trump campaign doubled down, criticizing Schumer, congressional Democrats, supported Palestinians, and the Biden administration's policies on Iran and on aid to Gaza. And it just gets worse and worse. But yeah, you know, this is something that we need to pay attention to, because we don't speak in a monolithic tone. People debate, people have disagreements, and one particular upbringing, one particular religion, one particular nationality has nothing to do with how you believe they should respond. There are individuals everywhere who agree, who disagree. And that's what gives me hope, is the fact that people are speaking out against atrocities, regardless of what they're expected to do.
Best use of abstention at the UN, though, in a long time.
It really
time.
Is, yeah.
I mean, if there's ever a reason to pull that, I think this absolutely applies. The amount of bias, the amount of complexity that we're entangled with, totally justified or reasonable. And I was a bit surprised. I was caught off guard that actually occurred.
Yeah. I mean, me too. But, you know, I have been seeing a change.
Well, there's been, from the administration and in general, across government, there has been absolutely every bit of as much condemnation and effort to pivot a little bit. And I think then those actions at the UN by the U.S. actually reflected that change.
Now, here's an interesting piece from factcheck.org, which is a fun site to visit because there's always something being misrepresented. Disinformation dealers often rehash old claims in order to stir up reactions from their followers on social media. For example, a recent post on Facebook revisited an issue from 2020 and added a new false twist. The post came from a site called OpenTheBooks.com. They're a project of the nonprofit organization American Transparency, which has recently been featured by two conservative outlets, the Epoch Times and your friends at Newsmax, a history of spreading false claims. The post said, Biden paid 2.2 million dead people $3.6 billion during the COVID pandemic. Wow, Biden, really? Well, it's not true that the payments happened during the Biden administration, but here's what is true about the old issue that the Post is reviving. On March 27th, 2020, shortly after the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a pandemic, then-President Donald Trump signed the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, or CARES Act, and that act offered several programs aimed at easing the economic impact of the pandemic, including one that provided stimulus checks of up to $1,200 to eligible individuals, plus $500 per child under age 17. Most of those checks, the first three batches, which made up about 72% of them, have been sent out by May 31st, 2020, according to a report from the Office of the Inspector General published June 25th, 2020. And some of those checks had gone to people who were dead, the report said. Typically, IRS uses third-party data, such as the death records maintained by the Social Security Administration, to detect and prevent erroneous and fraudulent tax refund claims, the report explained. However, Treasury and IRS did not use the death records to stop payments to deceased individuals for the first three batches of payments because of the legal interpretation under which IRS was operating. Lawyers for the IRS thought that they couldn't deny payments to people who had filed taxes in 2018 or 2019, because the CARES Act mandated that the payments be distributed as rapidly as possible, the U.S. Treasury and the IRS used many of the operational policies and procedures developed in 2008 for the stimulus payments, which did not include using death records as a filter to halt payments to decedents. Is that how you say it? That's according to the Government Accountability Office report. As a result, as of April 30th, 2020, almost 1.1 million payments worth about $1.4 million had gone to dead people, according to the report. This news was covered by the media at the time, so there's nothing new here. A later report issued on May 24th, 2021, by the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration, found as of July 16th, 2020, before Biden took office, well before, 2.2 million payments totaling $3.5 billion had gone to dead people. That's where the social media got its numbers. Social media posts, that's where they got their numbers. The OpenTheBooks.com post linked to its report, the COVID Aid Waste Compendium, which cited a San Francisco Chronicle's article about IRS payments to dead people. That news article, which relied on the Inspector General's report, also said the IRS had later asked for those payments back and that the second and third round stimulus payments approved later by Congress specifically excluded people who had died. Yeah, you live and you learn. In the Inspector General's report, researchers removed duplicate payments and payments that had been canceled or returned as undeliverable, as well as those that had been returned voluntarily. They arrived at a final figure of 1.4 million payments totaling $2.5 billion that had gone to dead people. So the Facebook post from American Transparency uses estimates from an old report about an issue that has already been publicized, and it names the wrong presidential administration. This happened under the Trump administration, which ended on January 21st, 2021. That is how lies are spread, and that's also how lies are countered. So I recommend people go to factcheck.org every day and see what kind of lies are being tested on the American people. It's amazing how many of them stick, though. It really is. It's disconcerting. But it's good to see the facts, you know, support something a bit sane.
Well, people have a lot of tools now to capture and otherwise recontextualize lies like that and then report them with one of the myriad fact-checking organizations that are out there, especially during big political campaign seasons. But that's about as much as I can say.
Well,
it's of course something that needs active scrutiny, and the people that are doing that need to be protected. They need to be supported and defended from the kinds of defamation and attacks that they for doing such noble work would be subjected to.
You know, factcheck.org is going to be subjected to some of that. How dare they? How dare they go against the fiction that's being spread around? If you get your news from Facebook, you're getting someone's opinion. You're not getting the news, all right? It's not a reliable source. Even if they have links, go to the source. Go to actual news. Read the Associated Press directly. Read UPI. They're still around, by the way. Or Reuters. Or, you know, the BBC. Or Al Jazeera. Or even CNN. The International Department. They do a fairly good job. Or pick a country. Pick a country that's democratic and not a dictatorship. Although, you know, looking at those too, you can learn an awful lot about how people can be manipulated, like Putin is trying to do. All right, hey, tomorrow's a big day. The MTA is set to vote on finalizing the congestion pricing plan. Yeah, it's something I'm actually looking forward to. It now includes a few more exemptions, such as one for a popular Long Island commuter bus company. Okay, yeah, why not? It's a bus. The Metropolitan Transportation Authority officials confirmed yesterday that the agency's full board will vote Wednesday on the toll rates for its Central Business District tolling program, which will charge most vehicles $15 for driving below 60th Street in Manhattan during peak hours. Basically you drive into Manhattan. Let's say you're driving from Long Island into Manhattan during the day. You pay $15 to do that, and there's less cars in Manhattan as a result. And your $15 goes towards mass transit, which I think we all can agree deserves improvements of all sorts. You know, maybe electrification out to the Port Jefferson line. That might be a good thing. They're looking at starting this in June, but they've acknowledged that several pending lawsuits could delay the plan. MTA Deputy Chief of Police and External Relations, Juliet Michelson, said in a statement that the plan being considered by the board will be closely tied to the vision recommended by an MTA advisory board in October, but with certain clarifications that include items raised by the City of New York and others, such as commuter vans and the Taxi Limousine Commission, the Hampton Jitney, which is the bus company we referred to. So, of course, there are people who are against this, and entities that are against this, lawsuits of all sorts, people from New Jersey and Staten Island are basically fighting this tooth and nail. But, you know, I think it's a good thing. I think it's a really good thing because, you know, too many people, first of all, I don't understand why people in Staten Island would want to drive into Manhattan. It doesn't make any sense. You have to take the Verrazano Bridge, drive through Brooklyn, and then take some other tunnel or bridge to get to Manhattan. That's insane. Why not just take the ferry, which doesn't cost anything? And then you can get anywhere you want in Manhattan super easy. It's not a big deal. You know, they do this in London. It seems to work pretty well. And I think we could use more open spaces in Manhattan and have a really good city as a result. Any thoughts, Kyle?
Oh, no, I concur. Pretty much everything you said, definitely worth experimenting with. If it's not working in some regards, I'm sure we can maybe apply some feedback and make some adjustments, make it work better, learn from other municipalities that have employed this kind of thing. But certainly, like, it shouldn't be off the table, or just because people are a little bit confused or maybe upset that it might disrupt something, some habit or pattern that they can't live without. You know, I think they'll be able to move on in life and endure and benefit in the ways that this may help by being implemented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people take the Midtown Tunnel. There's a toll on that. So if you take any of the other bridges and drive into Manhattan at a certain time, and that time I believe is 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. That's considered peak. Then you pay $15. You only do it once a day. That's it. If you drive in after that from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. or 9 a.m. on weekends, there's a 75% discount. I can't do the math, but that's well under $10. I don't think it's a big deal. I really don't. And, you know, there are entirely too many cars on the highways, on the streets in Manhattan. You know, I keep hearing stories about people being hit by cars, whether they're pedestrians or bicyclists, and that's got to stop. And that stops with less cars on the road and less traffic jams. And also, you know, there's the issue of pollution. Remember that? You know, all this exhaust. Good idea to cut back on that however possible.
Yeah, and the thing is it comes back to energy. I mean, the energy institutions that have billions and vested interests in the status quo absolutely do not want these things to shift or otherwise disrupt their business model before they're ready. You know, they want to be ready. They want to have their private planets or whatever the hell they're going to do so that, or, you know, redirect their investments to whatever we're going to be slavishly trying to move towards amidst their resistance for however, I don't know, a century. It'll probably take another 100 years before we can actually, you know, really wield power away from the energy companies, I think, from my vantage.
That's optimistic that you think we'll be around in 100 years.
Yeah, I don't even know that. Yeah, I mean, with the emphasis on nuclear and I don't know. But I really, for many years, and I have a lot of personal reasons and feelings about this that extend far, far beyond the context of this little radio program here on WUSB Stony Brook.
Excuse me? Little radio program?
Yes, I said little.
I'll have you know, this program is ranked number one in something I forget. But,
But okay. My convictions, I mean, even the alternatives are full of opportunists and scammers and stuff that are kind of making the alternatives look bad. I'm thinking of biomass and other quote renewables, but there's not a lot of real credibility from the entrenched energy companies to actually adopt better practices for their older technologies and real concrete investments for newer ones that are not solely their brainchild or solely geoengineering to counter the effects of their already dirty commodities. And I mean, that's to me the crux of it. And this quickly becomes a class issue because the oil companies have had 100 years to be billionaires and to victimize and subjugate and land rape and do all the things they're going to do. So, and they've co-opted government, they've co-opted media, they've got API running ad campaigns about plastics, making us feel guilty about everything. And, you know, it's not our fault. And as I said, their lawns are manicured. They don't care. They do when their billions stop. They do when they're confronted at their places of refuge and in the public sphere and throughout, you know, all the mechanisms that people have to weigh in. But until we get really serious about them absolutely turning course and pivoting and doing actual good and acknowledging their 100-year history in having created and perpetuated some of these problems, until there is like actual honesty, actual sincerity, we're just going to get more of this to laugh at.
All right, we only have a minute or so left, but I just wanted to close with what I consider to be a positive story. A unanimous decision last Thursday, the appellate division of states, the New York State Supreme Court, said New York State's red flag law is constitutional, rejecting the claims of an Orange County man whose shotguns were confiscated by police after he was accused of pointing a loaded gun at a neighbor during a verbal dispute. I guess his argument was, well, that doesn't make me a threat. That's just normal day for me. Governor Kathy Hochul hailed the ruling, noting she beefed up the law following the mass shooting at a Buffalo supermarket by a white supremacist. Yes, that was in New York. The red flag law allows local officials to issue extreme risk protection orders against individuals and confiscate weapons. And I got to say, you know, I have a lot of critique about Suffolk County, but Suffolk County is leading the nation with results in the red flag law. Red flag laws have soared since that 2021 mass shooting in Buffalo, and Suffolk County is by far the most active jurisdiction. The most recent statistics from the Office of Court Administration show, and listen to this, 9,157 orders have been issued in the state over the last 4.5 years. Of those, Suffolk County has 2,779. That's 30%. 30%. Number two, we have 2,779. Number two, 494. That's Erie County. So, yeah, it's a good thing. And it works, and you know, it's scary to see how many potential threats there are. But red flag laws, I don't understand why anybody would be against that. It keeps people safe from those who have issued threats or are seen to be threats to their community, their family.
I'm a little concerned about this, especially for people who are not at all gun owners or anything, but would not otherwise want to seek out health, mental health, or other kinds of help, because they think that this kind of care would preclude them from whatever rights or self-defense or things they feel they also need, because they are not a risk to themselves or anyone directly, but because they've done work on their mental health. So that's the only area, I think.
We are out of time. OTW@2600.com. We'll see you next week. Good night.
And the jury who saw big blue policeman. now. My feeling up. Ah, that's in the lock on the one. Bang it, I got the keys. That's all I did.
Apologize.